Orthodox history says patriarchy, or domination of men over women, is the way it's always been in every culture from the beginning of time. Max Dashew says otherwise. In 1970, Max left college and ventured into the library stacks on her own, looking for the suppressed histories of women's power. In doing so, she also discovered how women's suppressed histories tie into colonialism and other forms of oppression. In this interview with Kate Raphael, Max reflects on 40 years of the Suppressed Histories Archives, which is consolidated in the new DVD, Women's Power.
Well, I'm here with Max Dashew, and she is celebrating this month the 40th anniversary of the Suppressed Histories Archives. Max founded the Suppressed Histories Archives in 1970 to research and document women's history from an international perspective. She's photographed some 15,000 slides and created 100 slideshows on female power and heritages. Her work bridges the gap between academia and grassroots education. It foregrounds indigenous women passed over by standard histories and highlights female spheres of power. Recently, Max has premiered the new Women's Power DVD, and she is now completing a multi-volume source book on women in European folk religion and legacies of the witch hunts. Max, welcome to Women's Magazine.
Thanks, Kate.
So I'm really so excited because I've always been a huge admirer of your work. Your work's quite interdisciplinary, combining anthropology and archaeology, art history, folklore, social history, history of religion, and I'm sure that I'm leaving some out. And it also spans the globe. So how have you done this research, and how have your methods changed or evolved over the years?
Well, interdisciplinary is a necessity for looking at women. I mean, you're looking at the classic historical documentation being rulers, and that leaves out just about everybody anyway, but women are the hardest to find. So then you have to look to orature, which is, you know, the oral traditions, for as also being a valid historical source. There was a lot more about women if you go into, you know, Iroquois keepings or some of the other oral traditions in different parts of the world. As far as how my approach has changed, well, the net has made a big difference, and, you know, being able to use Google Image makes it a lot easier to find things that I'm looking for, which back in 1970, looking in books for images of women in political leadership or any other area was just really, really hard to come by.
So you find things that you're interested in photographing, and then you travel to those places. And
no, I don't have that kind of funding. No, it's my whole process up until very recently has been library prospecting. And so I would go into the stacks and I would just start looking. And I've really quickly found that if you go into the history section, it's problematic for a number of reasons. One is that you're not going to find that many women. And I would go into areas, I could be looking for Tanzania. What's the history of Tanzania? Where were the women in Tanzania? And in that section of the library, there would be all these books on natural resources that Europeans wanted to extract from Tanzania, their own histories, their own oral histories, was not included in the history section of the library. So that was what really led me into trying to branch out and find the indigenous histories. And that, in order to do that, the way libraries are set up, you have to go into anthropology or ethnology. There's a racist bias that's built into the way history is defined. The images came along a little bit later. After I'd been doing this for about 4 years, I came across a filmmaker who wanted to have a segment on women's history in a documentary she was doing, and so I learned to do photography. And we basically went around to the university libraries in Southern California and took a bunch of slides. And that was pivotal for the work I'm doing because I really believe in the testimonial power of images. Aside from what I might say about anything, you can see in an image when you see medicine woman performing a ceremony and everybody's looking up to her and she's doing something that's curative or, you know, there's a weather maker or whatever it is, that this is somebody who was authorized by her society to have leadership roles and was seen as having wisdom.
Usually when people are doing sort of scholarly work in the way that you are, you know, the first thing they tell you is what degrees they have. And you don't talk about that in your bio. And I noticed you haven't talked about it here. But how did you, what is your background and how did you come to start doing this research?
That is because I don't have any degrees. I had an Ivy League scholarship in 1968, and I lasted about a year through the big Vietnam War strikes. And then I found that the professors were, in addition to everything else that was going on, because 1969 was such an intense year, I realized in my anthropology class, they were talking about matrilineal societies, and they were saying, now this, there was like a doctrine. This doesn't mean anything. These societies are matrilineal, but they are totally male-dominated, and all human societies are totally male-dominated. And I just felt at that point that there was no point in trying to go up against the whole edifice of these very learned, powerful professors and try to work my way through that whole system in order to study what I wanted to study. I said, all right, I'm just going to research this on my own. So that's what I did. I came back to the same town where I'd been going to school and began to work as a waitress. And going back to the library, I had my library card still.
And at some point, were you able to stop doing other jobs for money and do Suppressed Histories Project full time? Or how have you funded your work over the years?
I've funded it through basically as a laborer for many years. And then in the last 10 years, I became very ill and I couldn't do the labor anymore. And so then I was forced to squeak out an existence by just doing the history.
I know it's hard to choose because women's power spans so many cultures and so many time periods, but what are a few of the suppressed histories that are included in this presentation?
Well, I talk a lot about the female seers and shamans and diviners, the priestesses. One reason why I've devoted so much of my study to that area is because when you look for the women in the historical record, this is the area where they emerge. Even many times in patriarchal societies, for example, Greece, highly male-dominant system, had this overhang, this remnant of female priestesshood that continued, and so it remained a female sphere of power. I have a whole section in there about, this is something that people don't normally think about, is women's contributions to technology, because we live in a society where technology is really a male-driven sphere. But the whole, we're basically living on the superstructure built over what women invented. Agriculture, food processing, preservation, salting, drying, smoking, all of the biochemical technologies, including making of cheese and butter and beer and wine, weaving, basket making. Even in the 20th century, a lot of people still had women being the primary food providers through farming and house building in many cases. For example, here in North America, the vast, vast majority, virtually all of the building was done by women.
The DVD is broken into sections: monumental women, farmers, mother right, equalitarian societies, women shaman, African queens, and liberators. Can you talk a little bit more about what we will find in each of those sections?
Well, I did include the queens, even though I really believe that the bulk of women's history is about the collective experience of women and not necessarily great women, and not that great women are necessarily women of ruling class either. With the mother right societies, what we're seeing are social systems that basically have formal authority for women built into the social structure itself. The reason matrilineal descent is so important for women's status is that you don't have to control women's sexuality. You don't have to ensure that fatherhood is known. And so you are missing all of the stuff that we can see in history, women being stoned to death, all these kinds of really violent repression that were dealt out to women for breaking the sexual double standard and for being, you know, the masters of their own bodies. And you know, on the other side of that, you have patriarchy basically colonizing women's bodies in order to ensure the male line and the passage of property. You know, there we're looking at the origins of class systems. I threw in the monumental women because we're all used to seeing, you know, the general on the horseback statues in Civic Center or whatever, or the Spanish missionaries. And the impression that you're left in reading history books or and on TV is that there are no memorials like that for women. Or if they are, it's Queen Elizabeth I, you know, and these imperial figures. And actually, if you go back into the Neolithic and forward, a lot of societies have images of ancestral women that are stone monuments, some of them quite large, megalithic statues. And you can find those around the world, Colombia, in Indonesia. You have them in Western Europe, going back into the 4th millennium BCE.
You know, you foreground indigenous women in your work. So have you had dialogues with women of color and or indigenous women about sort of the implications of being a white woman, you know, making your life, centering your life around largely telling the stories of indigenous women?
Yes, and this is something that I think actually is something we have to shoulder, because without talking about those realities, then we continue to exist on this plane where the indigenous is just basically left off the map. But my strategy is to listen to what they are writing and saying, you know, and to try and incorporate that into my work. You know, and there's a lot of really groundbreaking work being done by women like the Seneca historian Barbara Mann, who has written a book called Iroquoian Women, the Gantowisas, which is just this very witty, funny critique of the academic biases and of the Euroform, which he calls Euroforming the data. Andrea Smith is another one who is talking about the interplay of patriarchy in colonization, the way that patriarchy was used, the way that rape, colonial rape, was used as a weapon to attack indigenous societies. I can't just not say anything about these things, and I remain open to correction. If something I say is wrong, then I will hear about it.
So has anybody ever come up to you and said, indigenous or non-indigenous, and said, you know, after one of your presentations and said, no, you're wrong, that's not what that means?
No, but I've had people thank me.
I was recently talking with Starhawk about the archaeologist Maria Gimbutas and how her work on goddess worship was suppressed by the academy, including by feminist academics, because it was too closely linked with the development of a women's spiritual practice. How has your work been received in the academy and especially by women's studies departments?
I had a time where I was able to go and do more women's studies presentations, but they had something that was called the theoretical turn in the 90s with the rise of postmodernism. And they went into this high theory thing and gender performativity, and everything became so theoretical. They weren't interested in women's history anymore. Nobody wanted to talk about patriarchy anymore. And so I felt like the doors slammed shut around 4 or 5 years ago, and it started drying up. It's funny, though, because now I had a couple women's studies bookings just this month for Women's History Month. So what I'm finding is just the clips that I have on YouTube, there's a lot of young women who are clicking into this and favoriting the site. And African Queens in particular has been a huge pull.
So, yeah, I really recommend that people go to the website, which is www.suppressedhistories.net, and look at some of the great stuff that Max has there. And there's also max-u.net. And coming up on March 20th, Max will be celebrating 40 years of the Suppressed Histories Archives with an event called Visions for the Long Count. Tell us about that event.
Okay, that's going to be stuff from the digital archives that's never been shown before. There's going to be a segment there on enslavement and conquest. There's going to be amazing images having to do with what I'm calling unknown worlds, which are some of these cultural realities that don't get described in most of mainstream history. The stone circles at Mesora in Morocco. And we're going to also have drumming by Matu Feliciano and Yayo, and Hawaiian dance by Leilani Biruli.
And that's Saturday, March 20th at 7:30 p.m. at Redwood Gardens Community Room, which is 2951 Derby Street here in Berkeley. It's $10 to $25. Is it No One Turned Away?
No One Turned Away.
The donation will benefit the archives. The space is wheelchair accessible, and you can get more information about that by emailing Max Dashu, that's M-A-X-D-A-S-H-U at lmi.net, or go to her website, www.suppressedhistories.net/events. Max, it's been such a pleasure to talk to you. And long time in coming here on Women's Magazine. I think we've all been a little bit intimidated.
Oh, no.
but I've really enjoyed having you here on the show. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.